I am also very grateful, recovering compulsive overeater, and I want to thank you for inviting me to share and speak at this meeting. A lot of times I just kind of I speak from the heart. Different things come out, so I hope good stuff comes out today. And what I always like to do is I certainly talk about before OA and with the God-given gift of abstinence in OA, and I've been in Overeaters Anonymous for 44 and a half years, and through the grace of God, I've been abstaining the day after my first meeting, and that is 44 and a half years, currently maintaining a weight loss of 75 to approximately 75 to 80 pounds, and that's about 44 years. And actually, my anniversary of my meeting and absent anniversary is in the beginning of September. So, that is coming up quick. I'd like to kind of tell you what got me here. Misery did, but a helplessness got me here, but I didn't really realize it. But I've always had a weight problem, but I think it came to a head when I was 17 years old, and I was taken by my mother to a diet doctor. And back in the late 60s, there were doctors known as diet doctors, and they had like this magical diet pill, which were amphetamines. And I am a compulsive personality, so that's a dangerous thing to give to a 17-year-old. And I have a lot of and I hope I can share them today. Again, I don't know the direction I'm going to go, but I refer to them as "There Is a God" story. And it took me a little bit to realize, but God protected me because I had a very severe reaction to the pills, plus I had a combination of sun poisoning. I almost went to the hospital. I scared everybody, and I was immediately taken over the pills. And that was a good thing. So basically, the diet doctor became my policeman. I reported to him, and I think I went once a month for a while. And the funny thing, whenever I mentioned the first doctor and probably when I went, I was, of course, in high school, and I was probably 50 plus pounds overweight. And so on my first anniversary of abstinence, I invited, it may have been the first time I spoke. And when I came in 1980, and I miss him. We averaged about 50 people a week, and it was the day of some meetings had 2 hour meetings. This one did, and so I don't think I spoke before. So I was going to speak on my anniversary, and I invited my mother, and I talking about the doctor when I was 17. I said my mother dragged me to the doctor. To the diet doctor. And, my late mother, I am so grateful that my mother didn't jump up in the middle of my qualification and say, no, that's not the way it was. She waited till after the meeting and she said, that wasn't the way it was. You begged me. And I bring that up because, we're in denial, or anyway, I was in denial a lot. And only 14 years had passed. And I had like really erased that, from my memory, that at 17 I was so miserable and, developing low esteem and eventually, progressive. So, eventually came a self-hatred. So during the dieting journey, I was in a couple different weigh-in pays and, but I was creative. I would invent my own diets and, one meal a day sometimes and two meal a day and, counting calories, which was a fiasco because I made sure that I had two diet type meals earlier in the day, and the third meal was just well, what it was, and I get a kick out. I like to. I don't know if this meeting mentions food or not, and I'm okay as long as it's not glorified, but I also get a kick out of describing things. And I had about 1,000 calories on that calorie counting thing for my dinner, I computed the 3/4 pound bag of these sweet things that have initials on them, was about 1,000 calories. So I had a dinner of pure sugar, and that's another thing I bring up. I am addicted to sugar. All these diets and the weigh-in pays I was in, one thing usually, well, they had in common is they had increments. They had ounces and they had cups. And, I remember the one weigh-in pay used to sell scales, and I'm sure I bought one or two, and maybe I, weighed briefly, very briefly. And when I came into the fellowship, the Dignity of Choice pamphlet just had arrived, and so I picked a food plan called the Basic Four, and I think remnants of it are still there. I think it's called the Basic Plan today. And I was grateful that there was some kind of idea because I really didn't know what to do when I chose that, and there were increments on it, and I started weighing, measuring. And in the abstinent definition that was just read, it's refraining from compulsive eating and also compulsive food behaviors. And that's why sometimes we see people, have different food plans because of their behavior, and it's crafted to that. Among my addictions to sugar and snack foods and white bread flour, I was a volume eater. I basically ate all the time without definition of mealtime. So I started weighing and measuring. And the incredible free, that's a discipline. And the incredible freedom I experience from, putting it on a scale and, putting the food on a scale or in a measuring cup. And I don't know, I had my breakfast already. I was up earlier, so I weighed and measured this morning, and I'll weigh and measure for the rest of the day. And it's just part of me. It's funny. I had, we talked, I mentioned the progressive nature of our real, and that's another thing. At my first meeting, I had heard compulsive overeater, and I listened and I said, that sounds like me, but I heard another word, And I didn't want to address it. I didn't want to say it. I didn't want to think it. And so after 6 meetings or so, I say six, it could have been less, could have been more. And so that was a few weeks of time. Certainly go to a lot more meetings than I did when I first came in. And I had, and that word was disease. And then I learned about this disease. It's incurable. It ultimately will make your life miserable. Very well shortens lives. And also, it's a disease that tells you you don't have one. So I am absolutely, to this day, 44 and a half years later, I have no doubt in my mind that I have the disease of compulsive overeating. But the good news is it can be put in remission. And that is, I say simply, not always easily, done by working and living the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And, I have done a lot of service, but I'm among people that do so much more. So it's, but we're all equal. And, we could do it in any way. There was a story in the OA book about a person, and he talked about his service. No, he basically said he has service, he has done service beyond the group level and, on region level and world service level. And this is the part I loved. And at meetings, I've emptied the garbage cans or the waste baskets. So you can do service in so many different ways. But I know for a fact that unless I give it away, I can't keep it. And like I say, I'm kind of bouncing all over a bit. And you know what? I'm going to go back to my, well, to the person who 12-stepped me. I was, and again, my weight fluctuated during this dieting career of mine from 25 pounds from what I am now to 95 pounds. So it was, higher, and somebody came in and said, "I see the way you eat and work." I was mortified. Mortified. I did my best to. It was a big building, and there were vending machines and a couple cafeterias, and I did move from area to area, and I also, found a safe harbor in the bathrooms. I worked in a refrigerated warehouse, so we had big pockets. So I would, bring the food in the where you close the door and it's just you, and I would eat there. And he said this, and he said there's something I think could help you called Overeaters Anonymous. And I said, well, I appreciate it, but I was on some cockamamie diet. I think it was a betting diet with people who, I don't know what it was. Well, I do know. It was just craziness and desperation and desperation and hopelessness. And I said, yeah, but I appreciate it. And then I said, what a nerf. I heard all these bad things about this guy. He owns a motorcycle. I know that. There's a beard hat down here and he drinks. And he's telling me. So everything crashed. I had 2 years prior, I'd moved in by myself. The disease, the progressiveness, the way I was eating, the disgusting things I was doing with food. I was by myself. I was divorced at a young age. I only saw the kids, one night in the weekend. And otherwise, it's me. So the eating went crazy. And in a month, I looked up and I found my first meeting. And after a few meetings, I just in my heart knew I was going to give it a try, and I went up to him, and most of you figured it out that Mike, so I remember his name, Mike was in AA, and he knew of OA, and he 12-stepped me, and God puts rescuers in it. There's an Eskimo story to go with it, to where an Eskimo leads you out of the wilderness, and he did. And but then again, it was up to me to stay, and a lot of things have happened in my life, and I'm a member of the No Matter What Club, abstinent no matter what, and I used to say abstinence is the most important thing in my life, but then I would always feel I'm obligated to say, yeah, but it can't be the only thing in my life because my disease attacks me on three levels. And, and so my, recovery has to, be on three levels. So I say, if I'm not emotionally in balance, if I'm not spiritually fit, and it's just the physical, I'm on the diet and all this, and all this stuff. And then again, in the OA Brown Book, I read it in a personal story, and I've been saying it ever since. The person said it just slightly different. And it was this: God-given abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. God did not give me a diet. He gave me a way of life, a sane and useful living. And again, I am not perfect. And, the great thing about this wonderful fellowship is that it realizes potential. I didn't come in OA as a horrible person.
3 minute gentle reminder.
Thank you. I didn't come in as a horrible person. But certainly I came as a very self-hating person. I only have a few minutes, and and I really didn't touch on the steps. The first step, I say I don't fear, but I respect the power of the first compulsive bite. And I am always aware not to give the power back to the food. I always have my higher power. He's in the power department. And I said that I would the spiritual principle of honesty. I live a program of honesty. And I talk about I don't say it's the least talked about spiritual principle, but I love it. And it's step five spiritual principle, integrity. And I try and live a life. I don't always, but I try. And a oh, I could close with this. This is good. That I remembered to say it, because I really didn't touch on the steps. I was at an outreach commitment several years ago. We were very fortunate. We had a relationship with a medical school in New Jersey, and once a year we were part of a symposium. It's like, it was to medical students, first and second year. And it was about 100 every time we had. We went several times. And they said, and we shared it with a doctor who treated obesity and somebody from the bariatric community. And something happened to them this one time, and they had to leave. And so we had a few of us. So we had like two or three speakers, and then everybody was invited up on the stage and the table. And students asked us questions. And this is the strangest question. Well, I thought it was strange. Nah, not strange, just I was surprised. That's better put. And the students said, "What is the hardest step for you to work?" And my co-always answered, different steps and stuff. And I said, it's not even a full step. It's the third part of the 12 step to practice these principles in all my affairs, not just talking to you, but everywhere. I don't always do it, but my goal is to try, and and when I struggle, to ask God for the help. And with that, I just want to tell you, I probably could have gone for another half an hour. And thank you so much for inviting me.